You're now listening to Crunch Time with David Grubb. No hot takes, no gimmicks. You love sports, he lives them. So buckle up your chin straps, because it's time to wrap up your workday with Crunch Time here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. Simulcast on Stadium 32.3.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Crunch Time with David Grubb, broadcasting live from the First South Farm Credit Studios here in Acadiana. Don't forget that you can listen to us also on the 103.7 The Game app, or check out the simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS on social media. Hey, go ahead and give us a follow at 103.7 The Game on Twitter or Instagram, and you can find me at DM Grubb on both of those as well. Before we do anything today, before we talk about any sports, right off the top, I have to make a couple of announcements that are personal to me. First and foremost, I want to wish a very happy birthday to my niece, Adriana Grubb, who turned 6 years old today. She lives out in California, so I don't get to see her. And because of COVID, it's been a while before we've all gotten together. But I don't get to see enough of you, kid. I love you. I know you're getting spoiled today. Enjoy your birthday. And your cousin will be out there soon to see you. And second, I'm going to put some shine on my cousin, Allison Barthwell, who today found out that she has been nominated for an Emmy Award for as a part of the writing team for last week, Tonight with John Oliver on HBO. So I'm incredibly proud of her as well. She has paid her dues and some of those for other people too. And now she's an Emmy nominee. So that's kind of awesome. And I just wanted to share that great news with you folks, because we're all proud of our families when they come up and do something phenomenal and get their recognition for it. So I know it's a great honor for my cousin to be nominated, but I'm rooting for her to win. She's up against some great shows, some great shows. But, you know, she did one of the more notable episodes of the year. And so hopefully keep my fingers crossed for her. In the world of sports, yes, last night the Home Run Derby took center stage. And Pete Alonso defended his title in the Home Run Derby. Our predictions yesterday, CD, were wildly inaccurate. We got out of the six combined predictions that we made, we only got one right.
You got half credit at least. I'll give you half credit there, David, because like there's no you absolutely knocked out the park when it comes to your prediction about Juan Soto pulling off the upset. So I'm gonna give you half a point.
Okay. All right.
Which is better than me.
Yes. Because you're 0-for.
Yeah.
Because you had Otani winning it and Gallo with
Mistake.
The most. And Gallo didn't get out the first round. Alonso, the farthest went to Trevor Story, 518.
That was nuts.
518. Broke the record that Aaron Judge set with 513. So no one hit one out of the park, but there were a lot that were all over the park. And it was my thing, and the thing that we've talked about with the Home Run Derby is that it goes on too long. It goes on too long. When you think about it and you say, okay, you start off, each batter in the first round gets 3 minutes. 3 minutes. And you can add to that time. You can get bonus time depending on the length of your home runs. So as soon as you hit one over 475, you get another 30 seconds. And you get a timeout. So by the time each one of those batters went and the commercial breaks were done and all the tiebreakers that had to happen in the first round, man, I was ready to move on. You had given me enough home runs for a lifetime because there were almost 200 home runs hit in the first round. 200. I don't need to see that many more. I'm home runned out. Now, I don't know if people remember, there was a TV show, and I'm showing kind of my age here, but there was a TV show that was filmed in the 1950s called Home Run Derby. This is where all this came from Home Run Derby, the TV show, which was players in the 1950s and 60s, you know, when baseball players didn't make a ton of money, and they would go out to a ballpark in L.A., and they'd do 9 innings, 1, 2, 3 outs, boom, however many home runs you could hit before you got 3 outs. They didn't go over the fence, it was an out. That show was over in 30 minutes. Now, it was only two competitors, but they did 9 innings of 27 outs each, and it was over in 30 minutes, and you got a champ. Baseball's got to figure – I understand you want the eyeballs, but 2.5 hours of Home Run Derby, when you're talking about pace and people talk about the pace of the game of baseball, 2.5 hours of home runs and people standing around talking about home runs is not necessarily the best way to spend my time. I think they have to find a way to streamline the home run derby again and make it faster. Because when it first started and started to kind of gain more of a cultural presence in the 90s, when Ken Griffey Jr. started taking off and things like that, it was still relatively quick. It was still an event that you'd see guys win with a score like 11-7 in a final round, sometimes lower than that. But now it's just this epic and ongoing event that seems to never end. It's too much of a good thing. That's what I would say. The Home Run Derby is now too much of a good thing.
No, I'd agree with you because I got home a little after 7, so I was kind of like behind, but I wound up just watching from the point when Pete Alonso just started just like knocking the cover off the ball every time. He was just in an incredible rhythm in that first round, put up 35. And I was like, okay. At that point, I started watching it. And then once it got to Shohei, I saw Shohei, went to double overtime. Probably not long after that, I just passed out for a while. Woke up, and you're at the All-Star Game celebrity event.
Right.
That was the day before.
It was too much. I couldn't. You know, it's after a while you just go, oh, it's like fireworks. You know what I mean? Fireworks are really cool at the beginning, but by the end of an hour,
well, there's no grand finale either. It's not like, oh hey, like when you see fireworks, you usually have that one final like big kaboom,
yeah,
where like a billion different like fireworks go off at once. This was, oh wait, you just kept seeing the same thing over and over and over again. There's a way to simplify it. I think you can kind of get it down to probably, I would love for it to go back to what it was when I was watching it growing up, when it was 10 outs. Like, that's the way you got to handle it.
Yeah,
and hell, even, like, I'd say probably reduce the amount of field, too. I'd honestly much rather, like, a Final Four type thing versus 8.
Because it used to be league versus league. Remember, they would do the totals for the national versus total for the American, and then you'd get an individual champion. And that's fine, too, if you want to make it league versus league and stuff like that. But it needs something other than just watching guys hit home runs for 2 hours. You come to BP early before the ball game, but you wouldn't stay and watch nothing but BP. And that's what the Home Run Derby is. It's nothing but BP. And so, but it's fun. It's still fun. It just needs to figure it out. Now, you did get some great information from Rob Manfred, though. Some very encouraging signs if you like baseball the way it was not that long ago. So he announced during his annual press conference, you know, the All-Star Game, every sport, the commissioner has a big press conference, and Rob Manfred said that baseball is probably going to drop the 7-inning doubleheader next year. Yay. The extra inning runner rule. Yay. And they're even thinking about adding, banning the defensive overshift, which is currently being experimented with in double-A ball. About all infielders have to have their feet, you know, at or near the dirt. So the shift may be coming to an end as well. I'm pro all three of these things.
I'm pro two out of the three things. It's the last one that kind of like, I'd much rather the shift be a part of the game. Like, I'd much rather that rather than, oh, hey, you know, keep it the same. Keep it like, oh, hey, you know, like going back to the old ways. Because I think, and mind you, this might be because of the fact that I'm a huge fan of the Astros, and the Astros definitely used the shift a lot towards their advantage. I'd say like the mid-2010s, whenever AJ Hinch really took over that franchise and really started to utilize that a lot more. And yes, you can kind of insert your jokes about using a trash can, insert that here, but it's still something I would absolutely like not want to see go away.
No, I think the shift is, it's in every other sport, in a position you have to be in a certain area. You have to stay within a certain area. And in defense, you have a legal defense at basketball. You can't stay too far away from your man. In football, you can't just, you have to give the neutral zone space. You have to be within a certain amount of yardage of the line of scrimmage if you're a receiver. Baseball needs to fix this because it's ridiculous to see a shortstop standing on the opposite side of second base. If you're the shortstop, you have to play between second and third. That's where you have to be. If you run past it, that's one thing. But if you've got all of your infielders except for the third baseman over on one side of the field, then that you're not playing your position. You might as well just start I don't know. It's not baseball. That's not baseball. And I think you want players to decide the game, not a shift. If you can't get to the ball, then you can't get to the ball. And people say, well, the batter should just adjust. Well, you put it – well, they will adjust too. But I think it's one of those rules that's why you want – if you want more offense and you want more consistent play, then you have to get rid of the shift because you're taking away singles or doubles that might ordinarily be there because of a shift. And that's just my thought on that. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I'll talk about today's guests. We got three of those coming for you today, a full show. Talk about the USA men's basketball team losing their second exhibition and more when we return right here on Crunch Time with David Grubb on 103.7 The Game.
You want scores? You have your phone for that. You want a recap? Go to 1037thegame.com.
If you need a friend, get a dog.
But if you want sports straight with no chaser, you're right where you're supposed to be. Listening to Crunch Time with David Grubb on 1037 The Game, Acadiana's sports station.
Welcome back to Crunch Time here on 1037 The Game. LSU will play in the historic Rose Bowl for the first time ever when it opens its season against the UCLA Bruins. You can be there for all of the action with 1037 The Game's Tiger Road Trip Giveaway. Enter in the 1037 The Game Clubhouse at 1037thegame.com to score round-trip chartered flight from Baton Rouge to L.A. You get 3 nights of hotel accommodations, hotel lands, airport transfers, game day tickets, and an invite to the pregame party adjacent to the stadium. The Tiger Road Trip is driven by Sterling Automotive Group, Total Travel Sports, and 1037 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. That's a heck of a package.
Oh, no doubt. I would love to be over there. One of my buddies many years ago went to go see TCU play in the Rose Bowl. He told me it was a really awesome experience, so trust me, I am all the way here for it.
One of the great views in all of sports is looking out onto the, you know, Pasadena sky from the Rose Bowl. And it's such a historic stadium, the games that have been played there, the players that have played in that facility. And for LSU now to look at it and say for the first time in the history of the program to be making that trip to the West Coast and playing against the UCLA Bruins, it's not even about the UCLA Bruins. For LSU, it's continuing to build that national brand again and making sure that you stay hot in those pockets of California where the quarterbacks grow and you stay hot where the secondary players grow in those areas. You want to have a great performance coming out of the gate in that stage no matter what. But when you're in that area where you don't get to go a ton, even though Ed Orgeron has plenty of connections there from his days at USC, you just don't spend the majority of your resources out in the West. This is free recruiting for you. This is advertising in the greatest place to advertise in the world.
Oh, no, it's absolutely massive to kind of have this opportunity to be able to recruit. And it's such a crucial game, too, when you think about it, because the expectations for LSU are to bounce back in a big way. We've talked about it a lot. I have that kind of ceiling the floor is 8-4 for LSU. And I think losing the season opener to UCLA probably would be something akin to what we saw in 2016 when Les Miles lost to Wisconsin in the season opener. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that was in Lambeau, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
I knew it was in Wisconsin. I couldn't remember if it was in Lambeau or if it was at their home stadium.
No, it was at Lambeau. Yeah, you're right. And they can't come out of the gate slow, and especially if you go to the 1037 Game blog, you can see talk about Miles Brennan and his role in that. And that quarterback decision is going to be huge. And afterwards, that's going to be going to be the topic of discussion because that's what it usually is. So we'll see what happens there. As I told you, we got some great guests for you today. Coming up at 4:30, we'll be talking with J.R. Gamble. J.R. is with the Shadow League. He also works with MLBBro.com. He has been covering Major League Baseball for 30 years, and he is live in Denver at the All-Star Game. We'll talk about the festivities there and get his thoughts about what happened last night and predictions for this evening. At the top of the 5 o'clock hour, my friend Ali Kosuf from the Bird Rights will join us. We'll talk about Willie Green and his potential as it looks like he's going to be the next head coach of the Pelicans and how his staff may look, what could happen with Lonzo Ball, and as well as some other draft targets and trade options that the Pelicans may be looking at. And finally, at 5:30, Chesa Boucher will join us, and we'll talk about LSU, the football program, and what the baseball team has gotten back. So a good day for the baseball program in that regard. Not if you wanted to get drafted, you know, you're not as happy.
Yeah.
But if you're a fan of the program and players coming back, that's good news. There's good news there, and Chesa will certainly be available to talk about that. And if you've got something to say, you know how to get us, 337-706-0111. Whew, that was a lot to get out in one break.
Oh, it's a lot to get out, but, you know, you brought up LSU baseball. They're getting a lot of guys back. It's a great day for LSU baseball, but at the same time, it kind of hurts because you wind up also losing out a lot of really good top-flight commits to the program, something I think we've talked about before. They managed to, like, get one to stick around, but getting, I think Gavin Dugas was huge. Getting Devin Fondo was, I think, massive, because that's a guy that's probably going to be, and I wouldn't be surprised if Jay Johnson has him as his day one starter when we get into February. He has his introductory press conference, which will probably be about half the length of Paul Maneri's. I'm almost certain, because Paul loved, like, those introductory press conferences. Those things would go like an hour and 10 minutes because you'd be talking about every single player on the roster.
Yeah, this will certainly be a different day for that. Last night, the USA men's basketball team lost its second exhibition game in a row, this time to Australia, 91-83. Team USA has now lost four of its past five games, including two in a row to the Australians. It's not looking good for Team USA. Damian Lillard at 22, Kevin Durant at 17, but it's not looking good for Team USA. When I saw the roster for Team USA, and it has some very good individual NBA talent, Jason Tatum, Kevin Durant, Damian Lillard. I mean, it's stacked talent-wise. It should be better. And, yes, they have only practiced a short time together. I think they've had, as a group, less than a week of practices, but these are two games. You lose back-to-back to a solid Nigerian team, which I think people made far too many jokes about, including Stephen A. Smith, who's now taking the heat on that as well, as well as his Otani comments. I don't know what his problem is. But a good Nigeria team that outplayed them and out-hustled them. Then you play this Australia team, which is one of the favorites to win the gold medal. And you get beat again. You played better than you did against Nigeria, but not good enough. My thought on that team when it was assembled was you built a team like you're building a 2K roster. And you just took guys who you said, oh, look at their abilities. These abilities are great. And when that happens, that's when U.S. teams have played poorly. We've had teams that had all the names but didn't play well. You have to, no matter what, when you're building a team, you have to have people who slot into their roles. You can't have too many people who do the exact same thing. You have to also have to have a hierarchy that establishes itself. You go back to the 1992 Dream Team. There was a hierarchy. Magic, Bird, Jordan at the top, and then everybody else fell into place beneath. It got decided real quick. Charles Barkley ended up being the leading scorer on that team. You know, the shots, the defensive guys were going to be Scotty and Michael. People took their roles and things fell into place. 96, same thing. 2000, same thing. Then you start to see the fall off again as they just started throwing these hodgepodges of teams. And you end up till 2012 with the Redeem Team. Kobe, LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Carmelo. All those guys, again, you had an order. Kobe at the top, LeBron, Dwayne Wade as these rising guys in that group in 2012. And it built something over the next two Olympics. You built that group up. They stayed together for the most part. And as you brought in new players, like an Anthony Davis, as he came into the group, as other players came in, Kevin Love joins it. These guys come in. You still had your hierarchy with Carmelo Anthony, the all-time leading scorer in USA history. And you had LeBron. You had that leadership. Well, now you look at this team and you say, who are the leaders, who are the role players, and who's going to pull this together? And then Greg Popovich is getting into it with the media last night. I get it. I mean, you know, if I'm Poppy, trying not to push a panic button on two exhibition games, but it's going to be a lot harder than what folks are accustomed to with Team USA in the Olympics.
I think for me I can't take anything away from the last two games, David, just because it's exhibition, it's friendlies. And I think for the most part, this is kind of like, okay, let's get our feet underneath us, especially for a lot of these guys, because they haven't played in a little while, because they've already been out of the playoffs for a good while, and they obviously were resting up, getting ready for this exact moment. I wouldn't be surprised if once the lights come on and they are ready for the Tokyo Olympics, if they even happen, I think they'll be able to come alive and really put together a really solid performance. And more importantly, they're going to be holding a gold medal. Because if not, it's going to go down as probably one of the worst teams ever.
Well, nobody's ever going to be worse than 88. 88's the ones that got the bronze.
So well, 88, 2004 got the bronze too, right?
But 88 was the last of the college ones, and they were kind of embarrassed.
Okay.
Well, I guess 04 was, yeah, that was bad. 04 was bad because that's the Stefan and AI and that group. That wasn't good. And that's why you had to have the, that was 08, excuse me. And then that's why you had to have the redeem in 2012. Wait. So this would be a huge problem. But I don't see how I don't think they're going to win the gold. I just don't see it. I think Spain is better. Australia looks good. I could see them not winning the gold. I didn't like the team when they put it together. When I saw the roster, you only have one person who's a primary distributor, and that's Draymond Green. Draymond Green's your best passer. That should not be the case. It's not a team that they don't really have anybody who's going to they're going to shoot it a lot from deep. I think this team's going to shoot a ton of threes, which means in the international game, you're going to see a lot of runouts. And international ball is a whole different game. So we'll see how it goes, but it's not looking good for him right now. The other thing that I love, though, that has come out of the NIL movement is the Restore the Records movement.
That's really cool, too.
I love the Restore the Records movement at these different universities. With Ohio State now and Terrell Pryor and his guys that got their records taken away from the university are asking for to be restored. Chris Webber's already asked for the banners to be put back up in Michigan. Put them all back. Put them all back. The whole thing was over penalties that made no sense. Tattoos and selling your own stuff. It made no sense. The records you didn't give those wins to the other school when you vacated those wins. Put the stuff back in the record books. That's what I say. Put it back.
No, I'm with you. It's time to kind of put this stuff back in its rightful place, especially some of the stuff. Like Reggie Bush's at least like somewhat makes sense in terms of the context of the time, but tattoos and all the other stuff that's kind of like, it just feels ridiculous.
Just put it all was ridiculous. All the stuff, because the rules never made sense. And if we just want to be historic, the games got played. There was a winner and there was a loser. And the people who were there, and that's the thing that's always gotten me about vacating games, is that you don't award a champion. We've never awarded the championship to somebody else. So what is the purpose of vacating anything? It's just like when Major League Baseball, if you weren't going to take the World Series from the Astros and hand it over to somebody, which they never were, then you can't talk about vacating anything.
Exactly. We never really talk about seeing like the Saints vacating the Super Bowl title because of Bountygate.
So why do we do this with college sports? Why are we punishing kids in this manner and taking away their careers when the games got played? And that's the whole thing is the people who were there would never forget it. You can't undo it.
Yeah. No, exactly. You know, because the Cajuns have had the same kind of thing happen to them with the Mark Hudspeth there. I know, obviously, with basketball as well, the death penalty they had back in the 70s, if I'm not mistaken, when that happened with the death penalty. But I'm just going more recently here because I can remember it. With like the first couple years under Hudspeth, a lot of those games got vacated. You can't take away the memory of me seeing the Cajuns rally from like down two touchdowns to come away with a last-second field goal win after you had an incredible onside kick with about 30 seconds left. You can't take that. You can never take that memory away from me. I know it happened. I understand you're going to vacate it for recruiting violations and not, you know, the Tennessee recruiting violations, more, you know, testing. Let's go and put it that way. That kind of stuff. And it's ridiculous.
It never served a purpose. All right, we're going to take our next break. When we return, we'll be talking with J.R. Gamble live from the MLB All-Star Game right here on Crunch Time with David Grubb.
Can help you with many things, such as better comprehension of the CBA or the latest fashion trends. But what he can't help you with is your food order.
Give me a double bacon cheeseburger.
Double bacon cheeseburger. It's for a cop.
What the hell's that all about? You gonna spin it now?
No, I was just telling him that, so he makes it good.
This is a sports talk hub and not that other hub. Back to Crunch Time with David Grubb on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station.
And speaking of stepping up your fashion game, you need to go to the 103.7 The Game clubhouse today and redeem 100 points to score merchandise like official 103.7 The Game t-shirts and face masks. So step up your fashion game today by visiting the 103.7 The Game clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. Going to the phone lines now and joining me from Denver, Colorado, where tonight's Major League Baseball All-Star Game will take place, is my man, 30-year vet of covering the big leagues for the Shadow League and many other places as well, the one and only Mr. J.R. Gamble. J.R., how you doing, my friend?
Good afternoon, David Grubb. Thank you for having me today. Excited to be on.
First of all, this has to be an extremely unique All-Star experience, especially you've been to so many of these. Coming off last year where there was no All-Star game and this one being moved from Atlanta to Colorado, just the fact that it's being pulled off and people are getting to get back into this kind of environment, what has it been like in Denver for over these past couple days?
Well, I have to say it's been more electric than I thought it would be, Dave. The crowd is amazing. There wasn't an empty seat in the house at Coors Field for the home run derby last night. And they were cheering and into it. And you saw people of all races, creeds, and colors with their kids and their families. Somebody told me baseball was dying. But in Colorado, this weekend is the complete opposite. Just an amazing experience. I've been to at least 10 All-Star games. And the atmosphere, I don't know if it expressed itself on television or did justice to how electric it was inside, but the atmosphere was just insane yesterday. It was a pleasure. Yeah.
Last night, watching the home run derby, obviously the entire buildup was to the Ohtani at-bats, but even in that, there were so many electric moments building up to that. And then for him to still, even though he does not get out of the first round, he still delivered in a big way and put on that kind of show that people expected out of him. How impressive was he? And then just the field in general.
He was very impressive. And even more impressive was the fact that, you have a hometown guy in Trevor Story competing, and all you heard was Shohei Ohtani chants and let's go Ohtani. And at first he didn't hit one out of the stadium for a while, but he finished his first, I think, rack of swings with about four homers.
Yep.
But he did cover. He heated up and had a classic swing off. But the crowd was just crazy cheering for him, even as hometown hero Trevor Story had a great start in the first round with 20 homers. It was undeniable that Ohtani was the center of attention, and the fact that he came back and actually gave the crowd something magnificent after starting off very slow, it might have been some nerves, it might have been the fact that he's not a traditional home run hitter, although he leads in homers that can hit for power. He's a line drive hitter, and we saw that in his first couple of swings, but in true clutch fashion, he got it together, he understood who he was, he understood the moment, and definitely gave fans something to cheer about. I mean, they just kept cheering for him over and over and over again. It was pretty crazy. Rob Parker, myself, MLBBro.com, we were sitting behind the right foul pole in the auxiliary press section, and it was nuts, Dave. It really was. Ohtani has such a great influence on the game right now, and people are really into him.
To watch Ken Griffey Jr. there taking pictures and his smile, and power hitters know, they know the swing, they know the sound, and you could just see it that Junior was watching another guy from the left-handed, side of the plate. When you got that beautiful swing that keeps that elbow in and it just floats off his bat, there's just something really majestic about it, and it's not he's not a masher, but he does,
right.
Ohtani just has everything in his swing that you want to produce power.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, he lost the derby, but baseball won. And his popularity seemed to increase with every swing. As you mentioned, the great Ken Griffey Jr., the most prolific home run derby player ever with three wins, back-to-back wins in 98, 99, the classic watershed moment where he hit the ball off the warehouse at Camden Yards. Everybody loves Griffey. And what was Griffey out there doing? Taking photographs of Ohtani. And then he presented the winner. So Griffey understood the magnitude of the moment, because I've seen Ken Griffey at several All-Star games and never did he have his photography hat on like he did last night. So he knew something special was going on as well. And then let's not forget, we also saw Juan Soto, one of the best baseball and best young hitters in the game. He put on a show as well. So, you know, as we enter tonight, Ohtani will still be the story.
But you bring up a great point when you talk about Soto. There are so many new and first-time All-Stars on the rosters this year. It is showing that there's a transition happening in the game of baseball. There is a new generation starting to take over. It's fortunate that some of them have the same names as the last generation that left, because their dads are All-Stars. But you have this new young group, and this is after last year and baseball being put on a back burner in a lot of ways. Now for all these young players to get a showcase in this moment, nothing else happening in the world of sports, every eye will be on this. You don't get but, you know, one chance to have that kind of breakout moment.
Yeah, very true. Baseball needs to capitalize. They have no competition right now as far as the spotlight. And then we'll get to see probably the two rising stars in the game, Shohei Ohtani and Fernando Tatis, face off, as Ohtani will be the starting pitcher and he'll be leading off, so he'll probably pitch against Tatis at some point. And Tatis is considered the face of baseball, and Ohtani's growing now as one of the faces of baseball, and he's been in the midst of some controversy this week, which has only added to his popularity. And those people, you know, as much as we want to get on Stephen A. Smith, he actually did Ohtani a favor as well, because those people who follow Stephen A. and may not be great baseball fans, now they want to see what's all the hoopla about. Why was it, you know, so detrimental to Stephen A. to say this about this guy? Who is this guy? Everyone wants to find out. So we're getting the best players in baseball tonight. Baseball's on center stage, and they need to capitalize on it.
Let's talk about two things in particular. One, due to the game moving from Atlanta to Colorado, the activities that would have honored Henry Aaron had to be moved as well. How do you think baseball handled that? All the players wore the jerseys with 44 yesterday, but I thought maybe they should have just kept those as the game jerseys for tonight.
Yeah, I thought so too. Even in a press conference, they all had the 44 jerseys on, and I think that would have been great to do, considering, you know, the festivities would have definitely been different if they were in Atlanta. Culturally, it would have been different, and in every other way, considering Hank Aaron's incredible 25-year career was spent, you know, with the Braves and Milwaukee and then with Atlanta. So I guess baseball tried its best to transition and work with the moment because of what happened in Atlanta. So I can't really knock them, but the celebration of Hank Aaron's career, I can't say that it was as great as it would have been if it was in Atlanta. But they tried. They tried.
One of the big stories to come out yesterday was the $150 million that baseball has pledged to the Players Alliance. This has been a lot of work coming from some notable current and former players. Can you just tell folks about what the Players Alliance has been doing and why this money is so important?
Well, you know, the Players Alliance, they're deeply invested in serving the black community, and their mission, you know, aligns with improving diversity and programs that deliver maximum impact and have the potential to really influence baseball. Now, I've seen the baseball diversity firsthand grow these programs and these initiatives over the last 5 years. And committing, what, $150 to aid and diversity initiatives in baseball is very, very important, as MLB has given that to the Players Alliance to drive, you know, diversity in the game and get more young people involved, because these programs are tremendous. Kids don't get that, black kids often don't get the opportunity to have top-notch coaches, to afford the travel, and things like the Hank Aaron Invitational and the Breakthrough Series and the Dream Series. All these programs are designed to increase diversity, to give players of color opportunities to learn baseball and to, you know, continue it culturally and continue it through the generation. So that $100 million will go a long way towards these initiatives, and baseball is showing that it's committed, at least in some way, to addressing the problem that a lot of black players have made known from their careers and even at the grassroots level, things that inhibit young black men and women from contributing to the sport or participating in the sport. And MLB's $150 million, you know, donation, that's going to do great things. I was speaking to Jason Maxwell. He's a former MLB player,
mm-hmm.
and I think with the Cubs, and he's the manager of the 18U national team, who's been very successful as they enter World Championship competition starting in September. And he said, in the next 5 years, you're going to see such an explosion of black talent coming up in the game. And, David, we saw that with the MLB draft, which we basically covered together
mm-hmm.
for MLBPro.com. Five players taken in the first round. That's a high number for baseball. And we had a catcher, which is almost non-existent in baseball. The last guy we could think of is Charles Johnson, and now he's almost played 20 years ago
yep.
now. You know, so black pitchers, Kumar Rocker, catcher and pitcher, to have them be African-American and have them drafted in the first round, that alone shows you that there's a shift going on in baseball. And I love it because the All-American sport should be correctly and accurately represented by a total, you know, cross-section of America and all the people that really do love to play baseball.
Absolutely. The thing that slowed baseball down was not because the game itself. It's people messing with the game, which I'm glad mm-hmm. Rob Manfred is getting rid of the seven-inning doubleheaders.
Yeah.
And I'm glad he's getting rid of those ghost runners.
Wow.
But just play the game and give it exposure. And too many kids just are not, like you said, finances should not be the reason you can't do something as a kid. That can't be the reason that you don't get exposed to the game. And I think that, as you said, you look at that field tonight and you see this wave of Asian ball players, Latino ball players, and some mm-hmm. new young African-American stars like Marcus Semien getting his first start, Cedric Mullins getting his.
Yep.
Baseball has multi-generation yep. talent. And even the kids that you would have said were mainstream 10 years ago, they want the same things, too. They want to flip bats. They want to have swag. They want to enjoy the game of baseball. And I think that's where baseball has to just catch up and make it a kid's game again and not a game that wants to live in its past. You want to respect it and cherish it, but you don't want to live in it.
No, you don't want to live in it. And there's so many, you know, players, like I said, coming up, and it's going to be great to watch. Taiwan Walker, hopefully he gets in the game tonight. We would have loved to see Mookie and, you know, Betts in there, and Michael Brantley. But, you know, in spirit and memory, they will be there. And like you said, Dave, baseball tries to outsmart itself sometimes. They try to do too much stuff, you know, the taking away the goo, different things. They just need to let the game be played, let the athleticism of the players come out. We need more doubles and triples and people running around the bases. You know, stop downplaying the stolen base and other metrics where, you know, players of color are known to shine. It almost seems intentional at times, but where it's a little crazy is MLB commits all this money to drive diversity, but at the same time, they kind of reverse all the good that it does by just the way that, like you said, they try to be too tricky with the game and not just let the game speak for itself. Let its merits of the game speak for itself. Show our best players on the biggest stages, and the next generations will come. I want to mention that. They say, you know, baseball's for older guys. Well, Dave, when I walk through Coors Field, whether it be, you know, the sections where all the fans are, the press box, different parts of the stadium, I saw people of all colors and definitely all ages. I would say the average age in that ballpark had to be about 35. So baseball's alive and well. They just need to not mess it up.
I'm going to let you go on these two questions. Who's going to win the game and who's going to win the MVP?
That's a good question. We, you know, everybody's first answer is going to be Ohtani, but I'm going to go with the National League because I'm an old National League guy, And although most of the MLB bros, the black players, are on the American League side, I'm an old school National League guy, and I think National League is going to pull it out today, tonight at the Coors Field.
And so who wins MVP?
I don't really have a preference, but I just think the National League is going to come through, and Taijuan Walker is going to come up big as the only black pitcher in the game.
All right, my brother. We will talk again soon. Enjoy the nice game, and I know you and Rob will be all over the place. So, I expect to hear from you later this evening.
Yes, we will. Thanks, Dave. Great show, and thanks for having me. Can't wait to come back.
All right, brother. We'll talk soon. That was J.R. Gamble from the Shadow League and MLBBro.com and more. We're going to take a break and be right back with more Crunch Time on 103.7 The Game.
Sports Station. .1037 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station, is more than just sports talk.
One-stop shop for mind, body, and soul.
Follow us on social media for the latest happenings in the world of sports. Just search at .1037 The Game on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Now, back to more .1037 The Game, Acadiana's Sports Station.
There is no better time than right now to join the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. It is free to join. You get the chance to enter to win great stuff like a $40 gift card to Misfits Dine and Drink in Broussard. You can only win that $40 gift card to Misfits Dine and Drink by joining the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. So go sign up today. Thanks to J.R. Gamble, who joined us and talked about the All-Star Game in our last segment. At the top of the hour, we'll have Ali Cosell, and we'll switch gears to talk New Orleans Pelicans. But, CD, I will say this tonight, you know, since Mike Trout isn't there, and he's considered the best player in the game by and large, but to have a Shohei Ohtani be the first two-way player in the history of the All-Star game, to have Vlad Guerrero Jr., to have Fernando Tatis Jr., to have Jacob deGrom, to have all of these players that there are still so many stars that baseball has at its disposal if it would just market them. Because all the things you want to see, the things that make you fall in love with any sports figure, any athlete, the dynamic ability, the charisma, the athleticism, the consistent performance, the things that make you believe that another person couldn't possibly have done that. Only that person could hit that ball, or only that person could make that catch. There are a number of candidates out there to capture the imagination of the American public, and baseball just refuses. And it's not about the interviews, because I tell you, I don't know much about, you know, most NFL players. There's not a ton of interviews about most NFL players. It's about the exposure. It's just about having them out there, about talking about self-promotion. It's about getting them on cereal boxes again. You didn't have to say anything. Tony the Tiger will say they're great. But it's just, you know, getting them into the cultural mainstream again. And it finally feels like, over the last year and a half, since even during COVID, that those young ball players now are starting to get some shine. I think that's the best thing that MLB could do, is start moving to giving those young players and making that transition to allow them to be the next faces of the game. And you'll get to see that tonight. So many first-time All-Stars, and it should be another great Midsummer Classic. All right, we're going to reset and be back at the top of the hour with Ali Cosell from the Bird Rights and talk about the latest goings-on with the New Orleans Pelicans, right here on Crunch Time with David Grubb on 103.7 The Game.
You're now listening to Crunch Time with David Grubb. No hot takes, no gimmicks. You love sports, he lives them. So buckle up your chin straps, because it's time to wrap up your workday with Crunch Time here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station, simulcast on Stadium 32.3.
We had fun in hour one. Now let's see what it do in hour two on Crunch Time with David Grubb here on 103.7 The Game, live from the First South Farm Credit Studios and simulcast on Stadium 32.3. and 133 on LUS. I'm David Grubb. And last hour, we talked a lot about baseball. And now we're going to transition to the team that isn't playing but has a lot going on as we go to the phone lines and talk to the editor-in-chief of The Bird Rights, the one and only Ollie Cosell. Ollie, welcome to Crunch Time.
It's so good to be here. Thank you, David, for that warm welcome. And congratulations on your show, buddy.
Thank you, my friend. You've been here, been around for a lot of this, so you know you've been on this journey, so glad to have you on board, as usual. Pelicans today, it looks as if they're getting closer and closer to naming Willie Green as the eighth head coach in franchise history. It's kind of taken a while. I think we didn't know as much about Green at the beginning of this process as observers and as we've gotten and dug deeper into him. How do you feel with that being the presumptive choice at this time?
I like it. I mean, you're right. We're basically just the formalities are missing at this point. Because it sure sounds like that even Sam Mitchell has been interviewed by the Pelicans, which you've got to think might be for an assistant job to balance out, right? Willie Green, first-year head coach. You need to get some veteran experience on that bench along with him, and Sam Mitchell feels like a good candidate. So it just sounds like everything's in motion. But to answer your question, I absolutely like Willie Green. Everything that he's done in his career, from his playing days to his stints both in Golden State and in Phoenix as a coach, he's done well to exceedingly well. He was always, for those that didn't watch him play, he was always one of those tough-minded guys that just put in all their work and then some, was always a team-first guy as a player. And he never wavered in that, whether he was a starter or a seldom-used reserve. And I feel like that's translated well into his coaching career to where he really made inroads, according to Steve Kerr and others in Golden State, when they were discussing his first couple of years as a developmental coach. And then, of course, he spent his last year as an actual assistant. He saw up close, David, what it takes to build a good culture, right? He mm-hmm. talked about that. I've heard him say he saw how Steph Curry, Clay, Draymond, they all put in the work. It just doesn't happen overnight, winning a couple of championships. So he knows what's necessary to build a winner. And, boy, the Pelicans sure need that. And that's what they were trying to do a season ago when they hired Stan Van Gundy. So he's got that, and now it looks like he's going to be able to add his experiences in Phoenix as a major positive, major plus. And when you've got players like Chris Paul vouching for you, somebody like Monty Williams, who's one of the most revered coaches in today's game, saying all the right things. And then when you just listen to Willie Green talk himself, I feel like he has an understanding of, you know, not just X's and O's, everything that it takes to be a successful head coach, but to build relationships in a locker room and with your front office. And I feel like that, of course, was the biggest thing missing, right, with Stan Van Gundy and David Griffin. So, like I said, Willie Green seems to check all those boxes. So you can't help but be excited because it looks like they're going to get the best guy for the job.
I thought the adding of Sam Mitchell to the equation was very interesting because, number one, I don't think people understand how well Sam is respected amongst players still in the league. You know, he's coached in Toronto, coached in Minnesota, and been in other places. And people think of him as a very hard, old-school coach. And, yes, some of that video showed up, you know, today. But I thought ultimately it was very beneficial video. He's old-school, but it is not in a demeaning way. And people also have to understand that somebody has to be the bad cop on every staff. Somebody has to be the one who tells the players no. Somebody has to be the one that says, you've got to give me more. And Sam Mitchell's capable of doing that. And then you look at his past interactions with Zion and his understanding of Zion's ability to handle the ball and pass the basketball. I think those are things that certainly play into what David Griffin wants. And then, like you said, having that head coaching experience augments what Willie Green will not have coming in.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, David. When you watch that video, for those that haven't seen it, it's out there on social media, but he absolutely has Zion Williamson's attention in that short clip. And you've got to think that this guy, you know, he's well received by players all around, but that in itself is very beneficial considering he'll be coming over here to coach Zion to get the best out of him, who is still a young player that has a lot more to add to his game and develop further, especially in certain areas. And Sam Mitchell, you're right. He is a long-time respected figure in this game. Go back to his playing days, right? and alongside Kevin Garnett. And since then, I know Kevin Garnett has always spoken highly of him. Well, KG's, you know, I don't have to tell you, David, but he's one of the fiercest competitors that this game has ever seen. And when he talks highly of Sam Mitchell and of possessing the same qualities, that can only bode well for the Pelicans, who honestly at times they didn't show that kind of fight that you want to see, get the most out of their talent in instances. Like, for instance, Brandon Ingram, Zion Williamson, they need to get better defensively. They need to bring it 110% to the court for every single game. They need to lead this team. So you need coaches who understand that, have seen it before, and know how to get that out of the players. So, yeah, I think that would make for a spectacular 1-2 hire for the Pelicans.
And I think the biggest thing that stands out in that soundbite of Sam Mitchell talking to those kids is when he says, no one cares about your rank when you step on the floor. No one knows who you cares that you're five-star, whatever you are. He's like, it's basketball. Then it's just basketball, essentially, is what he's telling them. And I think somebody has to get that message through to a very talented Pelicans roster that at times, as we've talked about on many occasions, plays so far beneath its own level of ability.
Oh, absolutely. And this is what I'm picturing. Because of his close connections to Kevin Garnett, I could see Sam having KG talk to Zion or B.I., bring him in for a practice, or anybody else that he knows. You know, I mean, he's been in this league so long because of his playing days as a coach, now on NBA TV as an analyst. I mean, he's got all the experience you need, but he's got the mentality, and I think that's exactly what you're getting at here. That's so important to this group, because even though I think Willie Green probably can get the most out of players, when you look at what he's done, like, for instance, with Mikal Bridges, right, crediting him for all his turning his ability into actual improvement out there, especially defensively. But you still need others that can send a message, maybe in different wording. And I feel like Mitchell would be that perfect yin to Green's yin to Mitchell's yang for this Pelicans team.
Yeah, you look at the balance then of that staff if it comes together this way, and you have Willie Green, who is not an intense individual, I'd say, outwardly, but a real competitor, certainly a competitor. Sam Mitchell, more fiery. You know, and then you have a very
picture his relationship with Teresa Witherspoon. That's a good, that's a heck of a 1-2 punch if you want to talk about, right?
And you talk about both of them being fiery and positive at the same time. People who get on you, but also get the best out of you. And then also the teaching that goes along with a guy like Fred Vinson, who we've seen make connections with players at his level to improve their individual skill sets. So you have four people who at least, and it's something that we've talked about over the years too, teaching the game is one part of it, and you have to have excellent teachers. But you also have those people who make the connections who take not just teaching young players, but teaching veterans how to stop making mistakes, how to play together with each other, how to communicate with a group. You have four people there who are all very capable of doing that. That has to be encouraging as that staff gets bigger.
Yeah, that the Pelicans need to fill more than just a head coaching position. You're absolutely right. Of course, Fred Vinson, he's you've got to think he's going to stay. They're going to want to keep him, right? The shot doctor that improved Lonzo, Brandon Ingram, others before him, and who's really, you know, respected well by this current group in the locker room. Same thing with Teresa Witherspoon. But yeah, David, the messaging, it needs to come from so many different mouths. And when you look at this roster, the one thing you can definitely identify is they're not the most intense group, right?
Right.
We've seen over the years, David, that's usually been the case. I remember when Monty Williams was here. He was probably the most fiery guy on that sidelines because the Pelicans had a quiet group. I feel like, again, they have a very quiet group. You don't see Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram really getting emotional before or after games, even during games. Every once in a while you see Zion, you know, let out an intense, you know, yell or release of some sort of emotion. But for the most part, no. And I feel like that alone is necessary, and so you supply that by adding that to the coaching ranks. So yeah, David, I like the composition that we're looking at currently.
Yeah, freedom. I think the freedom of emotion comes with performance. When a team is relaxed, and I would use this, and we could talk about the NBA Finals really quickly, but in the first two games, the Suns were relaxed, the Bucks were tense, and then you see Game 3. The Bucks get relaxed. The Suns played more tense basketball. And that the Pelicans are one of those teams that has not ever gotten past the tenseness. Even when they play well, there always just seems to feel like tension. That same kind of thing that you watch to a different extent, a more successful extent with the Bucks throughout the playoffs when you question them, is they have so much talent, but they always feel like they're one moment away from it all falling apart. And the Pelicans are a lot like that. Something has to be unlocked mentally for them, and I think that that's why this coaching hire is so important. It's not just about the age. People focus on Willie Green's age. No, the ability to communicate isn't determined by age. It's the qualities, and if he's got those qualities, more power to him, and I want to see him succeed.
Right, and we know firsthand where those moments came for the Pelicans last year. Of course, they didn't make the playoffs, but guess what? Came the closing minutes, clutch time minutes, to where their performance just usually went south. And it's been a repetitive problem. That's usually a problem with losing teams, and especially teams that don't get the most out of their talent, right?
Right.
You somehow don't get over that hump. And so, yeah, I think that exactly answers what you're talking about here. You need to have somebody that can instill the confidence in the players, teach them the right ways on how to overcome it, but more importantly, get that message across. So you're right, Willie Green, Sam Mitchell, with the holdovers hopefully from Teresa Witherspoon and Fred Vincent, they feel like that type of package that can do all of that. And that's what's been sorely needed with this young team.
Sham Sharani of The Athletic also reporting that the interest for Lonzo Ball continues, which we expect. The team names don't really change, though Chicago and the Clippers are the latest teams to be seen to be wanting to make a push. But there's not really a real path other than a sign and trade to a lot of the teams that Lonzo gets attached to for those teams to acquire him. It gives you this double-headed problem. If you're the Pelicans, number one, if he's going to go somewhere, you can't let him go for nothing. So you have to get something back. But if you keep him, it seems that that decision needs to be made relatively soon.
It does. Yeah, that's the first building block, really, that needs to be decided, because it's the biggest one, because it's going to take up the biggest amount of cap space, the biggest amount of years moving forward, most likely. And I'll tell you what, I know New Orleans is interested in keeping Lonzo Ball, and I feel like what came out today is kind of more from the representation side, right? Lonzo Ball is represented by Clutch Sports. There isn't as much of a market as they probably hoped. When you don't see the New York Knicks, who were long tied to Lonzo over this past year, and in today's latest release, they're not included, I think that raises a flag that there's really not that much of a market demand for Lonzo's service, especially not just an outright signing through the use of cap space. So, yeah, if Lonzo's going to want or is going to end up somewhere, it would likely come through a sign and trade if, let's say, it kind of goes out of the price range that New Orleans wants to spend. But I think if he stays within that price range, they'll welcome him back, because he's a valuable player, David. I know you and I have sung his praises over his tenure here in New Orleans, because he does a lot for this team. People have to look past the points, but it's everything else in this game that's required. And you don't have to look any further than the two guys he's been out there with, Zion and Brandon Ingram, where usually Lonzo's filling in those holes, right? Rebounding, defense, the versatility, the talking, you name it. Lonzo does that. And so he's 23, and I still like his fit for this roster. But you're right, it's going to be a coin flip, because it's not the perfect combination. So it's no surprise that his name's being mentioned. And, of course, he wants to land his biggest contract that he can this offseason, right? Even though he's a restricted free agent, he's hoping, or as you say, Clutch Sports is hoping that somebody's going to make a really big offer for him and therefore force the Pelicans' hand.
I think what I always come back to with Lonzo is, okay, if you want to move him, who are you going to get who brings the things back to the table that you're taking off if you let him go? Because there's no one else on the roster, on the Pelicans roster, who does what he does, who gives you those things. So if you're going to replace him, even if you put Nikhil in that spot, there are things that Nikhil cannot do that Lonzo is able to do. So that market out there, you have to be bringing back a legitimate starting point guard, because you cannot go into next season starting Kyra Lewis. You can't go into next season starting Nikhil Alexander-Walker as your point guard. And you certainly can't go into next season with Eric Bledsoe starting as your point guard.
Right, and that's why I think there's going to be a significant interest for New Orleans to re-sign him. because they know Kyra's not ready. Nikhil's not ready either. I know his stats as a starter. We've seen the glimpses. But to be entrusted full-time to run an offense, be one of the team's best defenders, especially in that starting lineup, and fill in all the other holes, you can't entrust anybody else on this roster that's a guard currently. So if you're not replacing Lonzo Ball with somebody that can, well, you can't really let that guy walk out the door. So that's why, like I said, I think there's a lot of value still of Lonzo's to this organization. That's why I think, you know, we've got to be 50-50 on whether he stays or go, right, David? I feel like we've talked amongst ourselves where we feel like Josh Hart's more likely to be gone because Lonzo does have a lot of significant apparent value for the Pelicans.
And again, Najee Marshall can do everything that Josh Hart can do for a fraction of the cost, and he's younger, and he's taller, and he's more athletic. So, I mean, like, Josh Hart is replaceable. And you hate to say that for a guy that you like. We like Josh Hart's intensity and his care on the court, but he also makes mental mistakes, and he also gets hurt, and he also is an inconsistent shooter. So, I mean, if you're going – I think if I'm going to pay for something long-term, Hart, to me, is at his ceiling. And I just – I'm not going to pay for a 24-year-old who's already hit his peak, 25-year-old who's hit his peak.
Right. And, look, if you could get Josh Hart to resign for, say, $5, $6, maybe even $7 million a year on a long-term contract, I bet you the Pelicans would pounce all over that. But chances are he's going to seek something north of the full mid-level exception. So we're talking well over $10 million. And you're right, that's just not a smart signing for the Pelicans when you look at, you know, where the money's already currently being allocated, right? If you do bring back Lonzo, he's going to take anywhere, what, from 18 to maybe close to $20 million a year. You've got Brandon Ingram's max. You still have Steven Adams and Eric Bledsoe. They're big sums. Hopefully the Pelicans will move off one, but you got to think if they move off of one of those, they're going to bring back somebody that's going to be making a lot of money and serving a very important role. So, again, it minimizes Josh Hart's potential impact, let alone what we just talked about, right? His ability to influence a game comes and goes because of the injury, because of his inconsistent shooting. And he's not, you know, I like his defense, I like his effort, but he's not the best guard defender, right? He's not very quick. I feel like he's better served guarding, you know, threes and fours. So the Pelicans have a hole. They got to slow down these guards around the league, as we saw. And Josh Hart just doesn't check enough of those boxes to, you know, to be able to justify spending that kind of sum of money that he's seeking.
Lastly, the draft is approaching. There's been a lot of conversation about the Pelicans trying to move up in this draft. I don't know. If you're taking a pick in this draft and you're the Pelicans, you're looking for a starter. You're not taking someone to come off the bench. You're taking someone who you project to start from day one. I don't know how many of those. There's a lot of talent in this draft. This is a deep draft. But I don't know if there's somebody who the Pelicans would start from jump on this group. I think the more likely thing is that this draft pick is used to help the Pelicans acquire a more veteran player.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, we've talked about all season long. And look, Stan always talked about it. He has kids and then even younger kids on the roster. I mean, they finished the season with 9 guys, 23 or younger. So you don't need to be adding more guys that need further development and starting, you know, further back on that chain because they need to start winning. Zion Williamson is getting a little bit restless, or at least his family is. So there's a real need to start winning and getting at least into the playoffs. And you're not going to do that by grabbing some unseasoned number 10 pick, because you're right. If once you get past the first 4 picks in this draft, who I feel like could probably start on day one on at least decent teams, then it's going to be another project coming off the bench. So certainly the Pelicans don't need that. And remember, David, I'm sure you do, but for the audience, the Pelicans have 4 second-round draft picks. So even if they move off this first, they can still add some talent that they like in this draft that can serve, you know, as role players down the road.
And head over to Birmingham. Ollie, I got to let you go. Tell the folks how they can follow you and all the great stuff you do, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. You can catch all of David's work, my work, and everybody else associated with the Bird Rights over at the Bird Rights. It's over at SB Nation. Of course, we're very much into this Willie Green hiring and what it means. Hopefully, he'll get formally announced soon so we can move on from there. Talk about the assistant coaches that got hired, and then move on to the draft, because that's what we're going to be focusing on. Picking our favorites that we would like to see if the Pelicans keep number 10, and what other uses they could make of the remaining draft picks in the second round.
All right, my friend. We will talk again soon. That's Ollie Cosell, editor-in-chief over at the Bird Rights. We'll be right back with more Crunch Time with David Grubb on 103.7 The Game.
Are you looking for someone who's going to take it easy on the underachieving New Orleans Pelicans?
I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
Well, bad news. David is not that guy.
Okay, let's keep it 100.
Back to the show that always keeps it 100. Crunch Time with David Grubb on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station.
103.7 The Game is giving away $100 Google Play cards that can be used in the Google Play Store to buy apps, games, music, movies, books, and more. You can only win this $100 Google Play card by becoming a member of the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. So go sign up today so you can have a chance of winning a $100 Google Play card. That address, you know, I got to make sure. It's a confusing one. 103.7thegame.com. People need to understand.
Yeah. Exactly. You need to get in on the action that we got right now at 1037thegame.com, the Rewards Club. It's always, like, pretty stacked, but I think right now is that time to get in because we've been doing the Astros weekend getaways lately.
They've been great.
They've been fantastic. I think we've got another one coming up not too far down the road. But right now we've obviously got the LSU Tiger Road Trip, which you just heard the promo for. So you got that. You've got all the great restaurants in the Acadiana area. You got some chance to win some great gift certificates from there. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on any of the action we've got right here.
You think about it, a nice fall afternoon
yep.
in L.A., you know, well, you know, Pasadena. It'll be weather will be perfect. Sunset will be coming down.
It'd be like an early afternoon, right? Is that some, like, I don't know, it's going to be mid-afternoon, like, what, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon their time? Because it's 7 o'clock our time,
yeah,
correct?
So 4, but by the time the game is ending. That yeah. sunset will be coming down.
Oh, especially Jim Gazzola, who's filled in on the station for quite a bit, has talked about like the Rose Bowl and some of the experiences. He's brought up Dodger Stadium too because he lived out in L.A., covered the Lakers back whenever you had Shaq and Kobe, the three-peat, that dynasty, all that stuff. So hearing him like talk about it, I'm like, I am all the way here for it.
Yeah, this is. I don't think they're gonna pay to send us out there though. I don't think that's going to happen.
Nah, maybe just one of us. I'm sure RP3 will be the one to get in on that action.
He'll be the one to go. He'll be the one to go. Are you excited, though, about the Willie Green hire? I am confident. It's hard for me to ever get excited about a coaching hire because there's so many factors at play.
Especially after we've been burnt, like, twice in the last, you know, few years, right?
Yeah, and especially because of that. Because the expiration date seems to come up so quickly, you know. When coaches get hired in New Orleans, they're perishable. You know, yeah.
So, pretty much. You're not wrong.
Because in 20 years now, right? We're talking 20 years. Pelicans got here in 2002. So this will be, this will be what? 19. This will be 20 yeah, years. This will be 20 years.
No, this will be year 19 because it was what? It was the 2022 season they started? Or
2003.
Yeah, yeah, so it'll be 20 years next year.
So in 20 years, you're on coach number 8.
Yeah.
You know, and
speed running it.
And the longest tenured coaches are Byron Scott and Alvin Gentry. Those are your two longest tenured coaches. You had 1 year of Paul Silas. You had 1 year of Tim Floyd. Then you had your Byron Scott run. You had Jeff Bauer. Like, I wonder how many folks will remember the Jeff Bauer era.
Yeah, I'm blinking you miss it type thing.
Yep, you get Jeff Bauer, then you get Monty, and then you get Alvin, and then you get Stan, and now it looks like it'll be Willie Green. So, shout out to Willie, pride of Detroit. If he does come, I said this on Twitter yesterday, I'm sending Willie a whole container of Coney Island chili because that is, look, I know it sounds weird that Michigan has Coney Island dogs because Coney Island is in New York, but the Detroit Coney is the greatest hot dog you'll ever eat in your life. It's the greatest hot dog you'll ever eat in your life. And I'm telling you, if you find somebody from Detroit and you ask them that, they'll say there's nothing like it. Ever. It's there's no chili like it. It's chili, onions, cheese, dog. That's the deal. It's great. It's fantastic. Greatest thing you ever had.
Oh no, I've never had it, but I'm sure I'm gonna take your word for it.
I literally
sure it lives up to the hype.
I literally had one Christmas, I had the chili flown down from
wow.
the place that in Kalamazoo, Michigan, which is right outside, and had them send their chili down by airmail, you know, and keep it in the frozen container so I could give it to my dad for Christmas. 2 tubs of chili.
Oh, nice.
Yes. He loved it.
I was about to say, what was his reaction?
He was ecstatic. He was ecstatic. It made him very happy. So give the gift of chili this Christmas.
It's like those commercials with, like, diamonds are forever. And it's
no,
like,
no, no.
this Christmas, get chili.
Hot dog chili, and I will send it to you. All right, let's take our next break. When we return, Chesa Boucher will join us, and we'll talk about the LSU Tigers and what they've done to keep this baseball team together, what they need to do going forward, as well as the great position battles coming ahead for the football team as well. Right here on Crunch Time on 103.7 The Game.
Don't let the Yankees cap fool you. David is not a bandwagon fan.
I don't believe you.
No, seriously. He also roots for the Knicks. Willingly.
He chose poorly.
Back to more Crunch Time with David Grubb on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station.
What can I say? I like suffering. Today is the day that you join the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. It is free to join. You won't be spammed, and you will get the opportunity to enter to win great stuff, like a $50 gift certificate to Half Shell Oyster House. You can only win by joining the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. We've been talking a lot about LSU, talking about the football program and the trip out to UCLA. We're talking about baseball players returning, so we needed somebody to put this into order for us. And so who do I turn to? I turn to Chesa Boucher, works for Fox 44 and NBC 33 in Baton Rouge. Chesa, always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend.
It is so good to hear your voice again, David. How are you?
I am doing well. I guess last time we talked, you were getting ready to go on vacation.
I was. I went to South Carolina, Hilton Head, for a week and visited my family and enjoyed it. It did rain a few days, but I got a few days of sunshine, so it was a nice breather.
Hey, you can't complain about that. Any time away from the grind before it builds back up again, and now here we are, ready to do it again. Let's talk about the baseball program first, in getting Devin Fontenot, in getting Mikhail Hilliard, and then Gavin Dugas announcing today that he's coming back. How important is it to the core of this team to get so many returnees?
Can I first of all say Jay Johnson is walking into – probably the best setup that any coach could walk into. For what LSU baseball did last year, they were talented, they were young, they, you know, made a run there, made it to the Super Regional there in Knoxville against Tennessee. But to have its entire starting lineup coming back for your first year in Baton Rouge to lead this Tigers program is pretty incredible. I don't think that he could have a better setup. Plus, you have the transfers and the incoming freshmen, but like you said, bringing back Devin Fontenot, Gavin Dugas, who, of course, led the team in home runs with 19. He was batting .295, starting left fielder. Big return there. Plus, Giovanni DiGiacomo said that he's coming back, which he would have been eligible for the draft, but decided to say, hey, I'm going to wear purple and gold another year. And also, Mikhail Hilliard. I mean, man, what a lucky coach for Jay Johnson. I'm pumped. I'm really excited for football season, that SEC Media Days just over a week from now. But baseball, man, it is going to be incredible with a new coach, with essentially the entire starting lineup back there. I am so excited to see what they do, and especially with Jay Johnson and how he preaches about, you know, the offensive production, his two-strike approach, kind of what offenses he's had at Arizona. I am just blown away with the guys that he has to work with. Because, you know, coming into this, you didn't know who was going to stay, who was going to go, who was going to transfer. And then on top, having, you know, somebody like Jacob Berry transferring, that was played at Arizona for him, and an All-American freshman coming in to the program. This team is just going to be loaded, stacked, and I cannot wait to see what they put on the field this fall whenever they have their purple and gold scrimmages. I'm going to be the first one at the gate ready to see kind of what they look like.
Yeah, you were living and dying with the Tigers during this postseason run, and when it ended too quickly for you, because you were lamenting the fact that baseball season had ended in your social media posts, and I know you were feeling it for a good while.
Yes, it hurt. I'm not even going to lie. I went to Knoxville for the Super Regional, was pumped about it. I really thought that they were going to put up, you know, a fight and make it a three-game series. Instead, we all know what happened in game two, kind of embarrassed. But it was one of those things of being in the mix of it and, you know, being in broadcast, this is my, I would say my ninth year in the business, but realizing that, like, the end of an era closes with pulmonary and the way that it did, it was just one of those, like, gut-wrenching, and it kind of broke your heart to see him leave on that kind of ending. And just this team, I would say they overachieved just because they were so young and so inexperienced because of COVID, not even having a full SEC, or didn't even have an SEC series to, or SEC season mm-hmm. 2 years ago, and to what they were able to accomplish was just really incredible. But it was just sad to see, you know, Coach Pulmonary go out that way. But man, he definitely set Jay Johnson up for success for this, you know, coming spring.
What does it say both about the LSU program and Jay Johnson in their ability to retain these players? Just his connectivity with and able to reach them and make them want to stay, but then also just the unique place that Baton Rouge is.
Oh, absolutely. To be completely honest, coming into a program like LSU, it's not a hard sell. Everybody knows LSU. Everybody knows kind of Alec Box and, you know, that atmosphere and what, as a player, it would be like to play in the purple and gold. But for what everybody talks about Jay Johnson coming into this role of him being such a strong recruiter speaks volumes. And especially for these guys, you know, maybe some of these guys who thought, hey, maybe I didn't play as many minutes or whatever the case, or many innings, you know, looking to transfer out, just to see that these guys are coming back and they're excited to play under Jay Johnson, I think that speaks volumes in itself. And like I said, having somebody who played for him, like Barry at Arizona, deciding to leave the program that he was so successful in as a freshman, coming to a completely new conference, to a new environment, to, you know, Baton Rouge is night and day different from anything in Arizona. So I just think it speaks volumes of what Coach Johnson brings to the table. And I have to be completely honest, his introductory press conference really impressed me, not only with, you know, he said all the right things, but I think it might have been one of the first times I'd heard a coach talk about character and wanting to build these young men, not just as athletes, but as men and to the future. And I just think that speaks highly on kind of what kind of coach Coach Johnson is and what he does for his team.
And right now, honestly, LSU needs some of that to rub off with all of the things that are swirling around the program. It seems as if it's been intentional by Scott Woodward in the coaches that he's hired in what he's trying to set forth since he became the athletic director, the type of people he wants to bring in, A, highly competitive, but B, he's also looking for a certain measure of integrity.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. And that's, whenever the rumors were swirling about Tony Vitello coming in from Tennessee, I got to be honest yet again. At first, I was kind of excited because Tony Vitello has that swagger, that edge, that kind of in your face, which Pulmonary is the most genuine, sincere, humble human being I've ever met. But I feel like LSU had kind of, in the past few years, had lost that swagger, that edge to them. So at first, I was like, oh, Tony will bring that to the table. Once I was in Knoxville, heard some things from fans and from some of the coaching staff, I was like, I don't think Tony Vitello would be that fit for LSU. I think it would only add fuel to the fire, and not in a good way. So it's one of those things when they hired Jay Johnson, just the positivity that I heard about him, what he was able to do at Arizona, and what it seemed like was his love for LSU that started way back when. You know, not a lot of coaches are that, I guess, are that big of fans of another program like LSU, or I haven't heard that before. And so it was one of those things of, like, this really means a lot to him. It's going to be one of these coaching hires that, like, he never envisioned being at LSU, and so it's a dream come true for him. So just his character and what I've seen so far has been impressive, and I'm just excited to see what he puts out on the field.
On the baseball side, you have a coach at the beginning of his career. On the football side, you have Ed Orgeron, who's essentially at the crossroads of his with the Tigers after having that disappointing season last year that did have an uptick at the end. There's still a lot of question marks going into the year this year. outside of the quarterback position, which we know is going to be the most scrutinized battle on the on that roster, where are the other places, especially now that they've also lost some more depth on the offensive line, that you're really looking for LSU to be better in 2021?
So the obvious is defense. Defense was their pitfall last year, but for me, and I've been saying this since the spring game, yes, up until Darren Rosenthal decided to transfer to Kentucky, they had everybody returning on the O-line, and my biggest question mark was, how does this O-line look? Because, granted, they weren't terrible last year, but they weren't great either. And so it was one of those things of, yes, you're returning everybody, but just because you're returning everybody doesn't mean that they're going to be good. If that was the case, then, you know, we would all be geniuses and know what to look for every year. But to me, it was one of those things of, I want to see kind of what this O-line is all about. Yes, you have these returners, but how do they handle it? You know, they've played a lot of musical chairs. And so to me, it was just one of those things. I'm interested in to see how this O-line looks and what they are able to do and to keep their quarterback safe. Because let's be real, you know, when T.J. Finley was back there, the few starts that he had, he got eaten alive. And so it's one of those things, how can you protect your quarterback and kind of move forward after coming off, you know, that championship, national championship run where they won the best O-line in the country? Can they do it again, having almost every returner back this season?
It seems as if LSU overcorrected. Everything went from, you know, wanting to add speed, and then the physicality was gone last year. I would imagine that this year, that summer and fall practice is going to be all about bringing physicality back to LSU.
Oh, absolutely. That was definitely last year. It was just, I guess the best word would be soft. Mm-hmm. It just seemed soft. It wasn't like a, where LSU, when we're coming to play, it was just like a, oh, I guess we'll play today. And there was just no consistency on any level. The only thing that was even remotely consistent was special teams. And obviously football, you have three different phases of the game, and you have to bring all three. So I don't know. I'm really interested to see in the trenches, the offensive line. I got to be real honest, Mason Smith, the defensive tackle, I'm so excited to see how he does in camp in fall, this fall camp. I'm like ready to go shoot practice and get all of the video of him, just because I was there on his signing day, and he, the way he spoke and the way he presented himself was just, it was like top notch. And Coach O kind of raves about him, and Coach O is not one to rave about a freshman aside from Derek Stingley, which everybody raves about. So it's one of those things of, you know, what is Mason Smith going to bring to the table? We know that he's dropped a ton of weight, that he's good, and just Coach O praises him. So I'm just excited to see him in person and kind of in action.
Chessa, we will be in contact throughout the summer and into the fall as we watch this team come together. Thank you so much for coming on with me. Tell the folks how they can follow you and when they can catch you on TV.
Absolutely. You can catch me on all social media. That's Chessa Boucher. Also, I am on BR Proud. That is our handle for our website, but that's on NBC 33 and Fox 44. Our sports director just had his first baby, so I'll be anchoring mainly for the next 3 weeks. So you can catch me every night, 5, 5:36, 9, and 10, and then also Saturday and Sunday at 6, 9, and 10.
All right, talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you so much.
All right, we'll be right back with our last segment here on Crunch Time on 103.7 The Game. Stick with us.
Time to open up the vault for the 103.7 The Game's This Day in Sports History. July 13th, 1993. Davy Allison dies at Caraway Methodist Medical Center in Birmingham, Alabama, from injuries he suffered in a helicopter crash the previous day. The winner of the 1992 Daytona 500 and son of Bobby Allison was 32 years old.
That was This Day in Sports History. We now return to 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station, simulcast on Stadium 32.3.
The Le Bon Temps Roulette music TV show on KDCG-TV is back, and you can be part of the fun. The next live taping will take place this Thursday at Palm Bros Cajun Restaurant featuring Horace Trahan and Asan Express. Show starts at 7 p.m. It's a free event. For more information, visit KDCG.com. I got through it. I did it right. Woo-hoo! Good yay for me.
Exactly. One hell of a way to end the show, David.
That's right. With a good pronunciation.
End it strong.
That's right. Well, look, we're going into the All-Star game tonight. Like I said, this is the end, really, of that first part of the summer. After this, we're looking at the NBA draft, the NBA finals coming up soon, the NBA draft, training camps are coming, college camps will be starting soon. This is that line of demarcation of the year, and we didn't have this a year ago.
Yeah, and you're talking about the training camp, the Saints, they just announced their training camp, and the first practice is going to be open to the public is going to be on July the 30th. So, hey, if you want to go
weeks
out there,
away here.
Yeah, you can go reserve your tickets right now.
So, you're talking 17 days. We're 2 weeks away from Saints training camp.
It's about damn time, man.
But I just have to think back to last year where we were at this time. We had no idea. Sean Payton was sitting at his house recovering from COVID.
Yeah.
And he was telling his players, I'll get to you when we get to you.
No, I mean, that's all you could really do is like you didn't know anything really about how the whole thing was going to go. But it's something we talked about a lot over the summer was 6 weeks.
Yeah.
6 weeks out is whenever you're really going to be able to make a hard and fast decision on what's going on. And in fact, we were going to get the season no matter what. It just was all about what shape it's going to be in.
And I think you see people say, well, we've hit a dull part of the summer. Well, it's about to get really exciting because you're going to have tons of position battles. LSU. Tons of position battles. You see what the Cajuns bring back with their returning talent. The Pelicans and their draft and what moves are going to get made with that team after they hire their next coach. There is so much that's about to happen. So if you're in any way bored, get ready. Get ready because it's going to pop off.
I don't think there's any – like we hear it all the time like with the weather more so. Like, oh, hey, you complain when it's hot. You complain when it's cold. I don't want to hear anybody complaining about boring, about a dead period in sports. We got a true definition of a dead period in sports about a year ago for 3 months from March until about freaking July. Don't miss me with that BS about a dead period in sports. We saw dead.
Be thankful.
Be thankful we got this.
This is what you got.
And it's been pretty good. Like if you know, Conor McGregor losing to Dustin Poirier is boring, honestly, sign me up for the head of the library club.
Look, we've gotten one of the most exciting NBA playoffs we've had in maybe a decade, maybe two. We've had a very interesting first half of this baseball season that's been unpredictable. I like where we've been this year as far as the on-field product for the most part.
Yeah.
So, yes, there are always things that we can nitpick about, but I'm just excited. And it's great, again, to get to that line of demarcation that is the All-Star game. And it is a rite of summer. It is one of those things that you just has always been there, and we didn't get it last year. And now you get to go home and have that opportunity to watch your favorite young stars and some of those great veterans as well and just enjoy it. And then if you're an Astros fan, whomever your team is, get ready for that playoff run and see what happens, what deals get made before the deadline and who gets stronger heading into what could be a wide-open postseason.
Can't wait, man. I know you're excited about the All-Star game. I'll probably catch that not too long after I get home on this Tuesday night. But we got Tiger Rag coming up next, man.
All right. So if you're sticking with us, enjoy Tiger Rag. And until tomorrow at 4 to 6, we'll be back right here on Crunch Time with David Grubb on 103.7 The Game. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.